This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. And if you were looking for separation of church and state today in Washington, D.C., you won't find it on Capitol Hill.
Mr. Speaker, the Pope of the Holy See.
Pope Francis, speaking to a joint session of Congress.
The challenges facing us today call for a renewal of that spirit of cooperation which has accomplished so much good throughout the history of the United States.
An historic moment on Capitol Hill, the 266th Pontiff of the Catholic Church and the first Vicar of Christ to take this podium spoke to a rapt audience. The Pope seemed well aware of his audience, and his message was a reminder that good intentions matter much less to this pontiff than solid actions to solve the problems of the world.
Moses provides us with a good synthesis of a walk. We are asked to protect by means of the law the image and likeness fashioned by God on every human life. Today, I would like not only to address you, but through you, the entire people of the United States, here together with the representatives, I would like to take this opportunity to dialogue with the many thousands of men and women who strive each day to do a honest day's work.
Rachel Donadio, culture correspondent for The New York Times and the paper's former Rome bureau chief, says the Pope claims to value action above ceremony but manages to generate enormous spectacle wherever he goes, a sign, she says, of his power to lead as an outsider.
I think that compared to Benedict, whose papacy was a little bit more troubled and who was a more introverted, shy theologian who was never completely at home in his public persona and who didn't really love tangling with contemporary politics and pressing global issues like climate change, now we have Francis, who comes in and really wants to engage. He really wants the church to be an active force in helping make the world a better place. That's the thing about this pope. I think he wants change on many different levels, global, political, and also spiritual.
Is he aware of the electricity that he's generated in his way of dealing with the faithful? Is he aware of how he comes across? And are the leaders in the church aware of his very, very different kind of charisma?
I think that his kind of radical humility has really drawn a lot of people towards him, people who might not have been drawn to the church before, Catholics, and also he's really won over the intelligentsia, not that there are 1.2 billion of them, but there are that many Catholics. I think that it's caused a lot of uncertainty for different people in the Catholic world, for different Catholic officials who, inside the Vatican, there's a little bit of disdain for this poverty act that he's doing, but that's maybe a little bit of a, you know, not particularly charitable view. But I think around the world, I mean, the fact is he's just brought so much positive attention towards the church that I think that most people in the Catholic world see that as a positive thing.
Do non-Catholics that you've spoken with get excited about, and even outside of the intelligentsia, get excited about this pope and his potential to be an agent of change that kind of was an unexpected sort of boon at a time when people are so disillusioned with governmental institutions right now?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I can't think of another leader on the planet at the moment who seems to be generating so much enthusiasm as Francis. It's a time when, as you say, people are very disappointed in political leaders. There's a lot of disaffection. There's a sense that things are not particularly in control in certain parts of the world. And here's Francis, who just is saying we want change and you know, wanting to make the world a better place. It's a little bit almost a kind of simple and straightforward message. But yeah, I mean, he has not gotten much bad press, and I think people really resonate with him, people all around the world, not just Catholics.
In the European migrant crisis, refugee crisis from Syria, Are his statements the kinds of things that government leaders in Europe feel that they have to respond to?
I think that he really has kind of put the pressure on them. You have to remember, he is a pastor. He's like a parish priest. He's called on people to take Syrian refugees into their parishes. That's a much different approach than a more abstract, theoretical calls for peace in the Middle East. Popes have been calling for peace in the Middle East for many, many years, but it's rare that a pope would say, here's what you guys should do on a practical level. And I don't think a lot of politicians in Europe are responding directly, but they might be kind of responding implicitly. Obviously, the implosion of the Middle East and Syria and the arrival of lots of refugees in Europe has kind of changed the political map a little bit in Europe. It's put a lot of pressure on governments, and unfortunately, it's also leading to a rise in right-wing sentiments. And the pope has been very much a voice saying, take care of these people, welcome them, help them.
Can the Pope use the parishes to circumvent government issues regarding immigration? I mean, if a parish says, look, we want to take Syrians in, forget your quotas, can he do a kind of end run around governments on something like immigration and even ratchet that up in the United States?
I don't know what kind of practical things at a practical level can be done in that way, but it really is just a message. It's more open your hearts and minds rather than here's a five-step plan for how an individual parish can circumvent existing legislation. I think that he's the Pope. He can say, you know, take care of the stranger.
But he's also a convener. I was just really struck by his convening these mayors and state government officials to talk about climate change at the Vatican. And they all came. Governor Brown from, a fellow Jesuit came from California. Where does this go, this convening role that he seems to be toying with right now?
Yeah, I think it was fascinating. I was at the Vatican in July and heard all these mayors and Governor Jerry Brown of California come and speak about what they were doing about climate change. Jerry Brown quoted Antonio Gramsci, the founder of Italy's Communist Party, who had a famous saying, pessimism of the intellect, optimism of the will. And that, I think, really captures Francis's attitude. He just thinks that, you know, the church should be engaged in helping grapple with some of these issues. He's also a pope from Latin America, from the periphery, who finds himself in the Vatican, in Rome, in the center of the Catholic universe. But he made very clear to these mayors and has made clear all along that he believes that true change only comes when the periphery comes to the center. So I think that that's a message that he's had for political figures around the world. And I think that that's a message when he goes to New York. What's the center? Is the center perhaps the periphery? Is he from the center or the periphery? This is a very interesting tension that's always existed in the Catholic world, but it's one that he's kind of putting on the doorstep in the United States now and saying, you know, who is the moral leadership in the world right now?
And he's also saying that you demonstrate that moral leadership not by aligning yourself with narrow principles about sexuality and church doctrine. You express that Christianity by taking action on some of these ideas. It's an action message, which is fundamentally new.
It's an action message. I mean, bear in mind that this pope has not fundamentally changed the teachings of the church on issues including homosexuality, but his comments a few years ago about gays, who am I to judge, really just set a different tone. It puts the church in the role of showing that it's a merciful and welcoming place, as opposed to emphasizing the doctrine and the finger wagging and here's what you shouldn't do. I don't think he disagrees. Obviously, he's the Pope. He's not going to change church teaching on certain things, but he's going to emphasize a much more welcoming and merciful aspect of Catholicism.
Is he having fun, and are the people around him having fun?
You know, I think he's having a lot of fun, and the people around him are too. When I was back at the Vatican in the summer, it just felt like the air had lifted. It was a lighter atmosphere. In the last few years of Benedict's troubled papacy with various scandals, it just felt like things weren't really in control, and it was kind of a depressing moment. I think that he's just, you know, he's in this seat for only a certain amount of time. He's 78 years old, and I think aware of his age. age, and I think he's going to just try to, you know, drive the car as long as he can and see where it goes.
So if Brown is right, and if optimism is will, he's bringing a lot of momentum towards thinking positively and getting stuff done in his travels around the world. I mean, optimism, will, he embodies both of them right now.
Yeah, he really is a kind of an optimistic force. And, you know, it just also shows you that the line between style and substance, between the political and the pastoral, is he's kind of managed to merge all those things. I mean, from the very beginning, you know, and from his insistence on riding in a Ford Focus and not in a Mercedes, and wanting to get out of the Pope Mobile and greet people, and, you know, washing the feet of recovering drug addicts. I mean, he's very much about, here are the actions that we need to take. I mean, he, I think, really is trying to hammer home this point that change comes when the periphery comes to the center, and he's a peripheral guy at the center, but he has not forgotten where he comes from.
Rachel Donadio, European culture correspondent for The New York Times. Before that, she was Rome bureau chief for The Times, where she covered the Vatican from 2008 until 2013. And here, we'll listen to more of the vision that the Pope presented before a joint session of Congress, his vision of politics and freedom, especially for people who are disadvantaged.
Politics is instead an expression of our compelling need to live as one, in order to build as one the greatest common good, that of a community which sacrifices particular interests in order to share in justice and peace its goods, its interests, its social life. I do not underestimate the difficulty that this involves, but I encourage you in this effort.
Americans, of course, will recognize the Pope referencing the Declaration of Independence there.
Here, too, I think of the march which Martin Luther King led from Selma to Montgomery 50 years ago as part of the campaign to fulfill his dream of full civil and political rights for African Americans.
Our special coverage of the Pope's message before a joint session of Congress on a very special day in Washington, D.C. continues. This is The Takeaway.